This is JT Crawford, interviewer on September 27th in the year 2020, and I am interviewing my wife, Wendy Crawford, in our home. Wendy is a registered dental hygienist in the state of Kentucky, and she will be discussing her experience as a hygienist during the COVID-19 pandemic in the state of Kentucky. So, Wendy, just tell me a little bit about your background and your experience as a hygienist.
All right, thank you. Yes, I'm a registered dental hygienist, and I have worked both in private practice and in education, working at the local community college. The last 5 years, I've worked in private practice.
Okay, and then you received your education in Kentucky as well, is that correct?
That's correct. Okay. Yes.
So, in the beginning of 2020, you were working at a private dental practice. So tell me a little bit about the beginnings of the pandemic, I suppose. When did that start to maybe affect you or affect your office?
Well, I would say it was probably the end of February, very beginning of March. You know, we were all seeing things on TV, hearing some things about China. And to be honest, we've heard things before about viruses, so I wasn't really concerned at that point. But I love listening to podcasts, and I was listening to The Daily, which is put out by the New York Times. And they interview, there was a reporter that has worked for like 20 years following different pandemics, and you know, we started to hear about Italy, and he was talking about how this virus was different. So I started really looking at that, and when the virus did hit Italy, that's when I thought, there's something different about this. So I started really doing some of my own looking and researching, and then March, you know, we got into March more, then you started hearing more things. And of course, then the World Health Organization declares that it's a pandemic. And a few days later, the CDC says it's a state of an emergency. So about that time is when I was talking to people at my dental office and the dentist and kind of bringing that up. And they were starting to buy more supplies at that point, because even though they weren't necessarily thinking that that they would need more supplies, it was more that it may be hard to get supplies. I remember specifically talking about, well, you know, this just seems different, it feels different, and talking to people at work about the CDC is saying that you should have 2 weeks worth of food. You know, I don't remember ever in my lifetime hearing something like that. And most everyone at work kind of laughed it off. And, you know, that's just a bunch of scare tactics. They just really didn't believe it. I do remember talking to, it was the first weekend in March, we had gone on a trip to Tennessee to see some concerts. And I remember on that way reading about the virus and what kind of precautions and what level mask you had to have. And I wasn't really even familiar with the N95 masks. And I remember the next day at work bringing that up to my dentist, and you know, that they're saying you have to wear these N95 masks, and he just kind of, you know, we're not going to do that. You can't get those masks, you know, for working in the dental office. So I really started to think about that and the level masks that we use at work, and wow, you know, we're used to in the dental office having to really focus on infection control and using a certain level mask. So I was very familiar with that. So
you were working through the very beginnings of this. You were starting to discuss these things with your dentist and with your office, and you already mentioned a little bit about their response, but what was the response like as this began to become more of maybe a national story?
Well, you know, there again, it was no one really believed it. I mean, you were hearing a lot about this locally, and I was seeing it at work that they, you know, it's no more than the flu. I mean, that's what I kept hearing. And, you know, my dentist had worked through, you know, HIV and AIDS and, you know, different things. And we got through that. And, you know, this is just another thing that we have to, you know, maybe adjust. We may have to do things differently, but, you know, we've been through this before.
Right. Yeah.
So that was really kind of the consensus was, you know, this is just another thing. This is what we do every day.
Right. So then, not too long into March, at some point in March, then things started to shut down.
Yeah.
So what was that like in your world, in the hygiene and dental world?
Well, you know, when Governor Beshear talked about we have to start shutting down for elective procedures, and it was specifically medical. At least that's what he said, was, you know, he talked about medical offices. We need to shut down for elective procedures. Well, I'm wondering, where does dentistry fit into that? Surely we would be considered part of that as elective procedures. And that didn't seem to be the case, according to what I was hearing in the dental community or what I was hearing at my own office. And then I started writing some emails and to the governor and making phone calls. And I think there were probably quite a few other dental professionals that had done the same thing when that announcement was made. And all of a sudden, the next day, there was a clarification about dentistry is included. And it was interesting that I think it was Dr. Stack that actually said it, when he made the announcement, and as far as what his thinking was, that if I'm saying the medical community is shutting down for elective procedures, dentistry is under that umbrella. And this is one of the things that I find interesting, because the way the communities look at medical and dentistry as being separate. So I think one of the issues with, and, you know, this goes with how insurance companies look at dentistry, is that somehow dentistry is its own thing and it's separate from the medical community, where in actuality it should be included and under the same umbrella. So Dr. Stack, when he came back and clarified the next day, he said, I assumed that would be part of the medical community. So yes, dentistry needs to stop all elective procedures at that time.
So what would be elective in a dental office? What would dentists be allowed to do then?
So any type of emergency. So you may have cases where you have someone with an infection or extreme pain that would have to be dealt with immediately, urgent or emergent care to prevent further, you know, even worse problems. But things like dental cleanings and elective restorative work that's not urgent could be held off and postponed for a certain period of time.
So then, according to Governor Beshear's mandate, then dental offices would have to shut down in March for everything that's non-emergency, correct?
Correct.
And what was the response in your office to a mandated shutdown?
Oh, it wasn't good. And when that came down, that Dr. Stack was specifically saying that dental offices needed to shut down, it was really like chaos. And I remember, I mean, my dentist was very upset, as were many dental offices in the area. And at that point, you know, we were going to finish. We were going to work one day. We were going to finish. And I ended up leaving after one patient that day, because at that point, the other hygienist and I were concerned about what procedures do we do this day. You know, if the mandate is to shut down immediately and we're in the office, then we're saying, what can we do safely? There were so many things that we did not understand with it being, you know, a novel virus. And so, you know, we had some words and ended up just basically canceling the rest of the day.
Right. So you went in that morning. So what was that like, discussing that with your dentist? I mean, how did you feel at the time? I mean, what was your point of view on what you should or should not do? And then how was that discussion?
Well, myself and the other hygienists had, you know, wanted to discuss was, can we provide services today without producing a lot of aerosols? So one of the main things with dentistry is all, you're working in the mouth and you're producing droplets and you're producing aerosols. And we knew that this virus was transmitted by either touch or droplets, being that it was in the mouth or in the, you know, respiratory type of virus. So we wanted to approach the day by seeing the patients and providing a dental cleaning or a prophy with hand instruments without using any rotary or ultrasonic instruments to reduce the amount of aerosol or droplets. And that was one point that the dentist did not agree with us, because he didn't feel like we would be providing the service that was intended or that they would be getting the complete prophy. So that's when we were told we could just go home.
Right. So then the shutdown occurs. Dental offices are closed, supposed to be. And so what happens then in your world as a hygienist who then does not have a job to go to every day? What did you do at that point?
So really, for, you know, I was off for 7 weeks. I spent a lot of time reading, and just, I did so much research trying to find out as much information as I could about this virus. Because I'll be honest, when, you know, the first thing was like, we need to shut down because we don't know, you know, we didn't know how many people in the area that could be asymptomatic. And there were so many things that we didn't know about the virus. So it was like, okay, we're shut down. That's good. We're not going to, you know, spread this, you know, be a source of spreading this in the community. But then once we shut down, then there was the realization that at some point we're going to reopen. And I remember probably just a week after the shutdown, that, I mean, I was waking up in the middle of the night in a complete panic. And I just kept thinking, how do we reopen? How do we reopen? And I was in a panic, not just for myself, but I kept thinking about the other patients that I see. This office full of patients that, you know, if it truly was being spread via the droplets and the aerosol, that's what we do every day, all day long. So, it was a lot of nights of waking up in a panic.
And then you were researching best you could. Of course, I guess nobody really knew the answer, but researching best you could what to do when you do reopen.
Exactly. You know, and the CDC had the interim guidelines, and that was, you know, my license is through the Kentucky Board of Dentistry, and my license states that I have to follow the CDC guidelines for infection control. So the CDC at that time had said that all dental procedures would be postponed unless they were urgent procedures. So that is, you know, that's where I go to for following the procedures and how I practice. And the CDC had not released any guidelines at this point of how you reopen or how do we practice with the coronavirus. Obviously, you can't be closed for 6 months or a year until the virus, we have a vaccine. So we have to figure out how to reopen. So I was looking at the CDC, I was looking at OSHA and other areas or other sources to determine what we need to do and how we need to do that. And at that point, though, I really didn't see a date in sight. It seems so far off at that point because every day you listen to the Governor Beshear and when we will reopen, these are the certain things, you know, standards we have to meet, or, you know, these are the, and I wasn't seeing an end or a date in sight.
Because and it seemed like maybe that dentists would be one of the last things to reopen. Because you said that hygiene and the dental world, they started to do these rankings of...
Oh, yeah.
You know, these jobs that were most at risk.
Right. And the dental hygienist, I think, was the, 98%... or, you know, one of the top professions to be at risk.
Right, because obviously you're in a person's mouth and they're breathing in and out. Not only that, you're...
We produce, right. Yes. So our rotary instruments produce droplets. And then I mentioned ultrasonic instruments produce aerosols. And, I use those every day.
So everything's shut down, and you're researching as much as you can what might happen when the offices reopen.
Right.
So eventually they did reopen. So what occurred between the shutdown time and the time that it was said that dentist offices could reopen?
Well, when the announcement was made that dental offices could reopen, it was a shock to not only assistants, hygienists, but also to the dentists. They did not see that coming.
And when was that? When did they say that dental offices could reopen? You can take a look at your notes if you need to.
So there was a news conference on April 23rd. It was a Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And that was the date of the announcement that dental offices could reopen on the 27th if they had a plan together. They weren't required to be open on the 27th. Well, from the 23rd to the 27th, I have to say that I probably did not sleep very much and spent a lot of time contacting a lot of people at that point. And one of my association, the American Dental Hygiene Association, is one group that I contacted, and it was our state at the state level. And they said that basically this had come as a shock to everyone that this announcement was made, that no one was expecting that the dental offices would be able to open at that point. And what I was told was that there was pressure from a specific group, and what they said, it was the oral surgeons of Kentucky, had that there was a lot of pressure on the governor's office by the oral surgeons to reopen.
Because the reopening date was the 27th, when a dentist office could reopen. And then this was only announced 4 days before.
Exactly. So there was, it was just utter shock and chaos trying to come up with a plan to reopen. And American Dental Association, together with the Dental Hygiene Association and the Kentucky Board of Dentistry, got together on the Friday before the Monday and put together a plan.
So when it was announced on the 23rd, then there was no plan.
There was no plan
on how dental offices could reopen safely.
Yes. Now there were some dentists that were already kind of the same as I was thinking, how do we reopen? And they're, you know, kind of thinking through this already. But there was no plan across the board of the minimums that have to be met to reopen. And I guess at this point, I'd like to read the letter that I had put together regarding this.
Okay, so did you send a letter? Who did you send this to?
Oh, I sent it to about everyone that I could think of. The Kentucky Board of Dentistry, the American Dental Hygiene Association, the CDC, OSHA, and numerous newspapers to bring light to this, because Facebook, you know, I started putting maybe a few things out on Facebook just to make people aware of the risk to the dental community. We all have heard about the nurses and the doctors that are right there with the COVID patients. And I wanted to make people aware of, you know, how this would affect the dental community. So I think people started to see, and I'm friend, you know, you have a network of people, and you have friends that are in the dental community also. So people started to reach out to me privately. You know, what are we going to do? I'm scared. My, you know, office, that they're not really taking this seriously, or, you know, so I started, you know, talking with those people. So this is the letter that I put together. And like I said, I sent it to as many people as I could think of. I'm a dental hygienist in Kentucky. I have worked for 13 years, both in private practice and as an educator. I am now back in private practice. The news conference on Wednesday, April 23rd, has caused a great deal of confusion among the dental community. It appeared as if dental offices would be allowed to reopen on the 27th with enhanced aerosol control, quote unquote. But then it was stated that the state wanted recommendations from those in the field on how to reopen. It has left some racing to get open as soon as possible, with others frightened for their safety because they know the offices are not ready. As you know, the risk of contracting COVID-19 is highest within the dental community. For the safety of hygienists, dentists, assistants, office staff, and patients, I urge you to take measured and extremely cautious steps forward in considering how and when to reopen dental offices. As a hygienist, I look to you for our protection. First and foremost, dental offices can protect staff and patients and be on the forefront of the fight against COVID-19 through testing. I don't know at the moment what that looks like. If it is a rapid test done at the office, we can quickly identify positive patients. Or perhaps there will be a central location for quick testing in each community where they can go before an appointment and provide proof of results. Without testing, we would always run a real risk of bringing in asymptomatic carriers, which can infect not only the staff, but other patients, even with limited contact and closed waiting rooms. For one, testing keeps any positives out of the office. Secondly, it assists our public health efforts by identifying those with COVID-19 and getting them into quarantine. Then, contact tracing can start. Testing is the best solution for both the offices and our Commonwealth. With a number of patients seen per day, you will have a built-in statewide testing system. This is a tremendous opportunity for the medical and dental community to come together as one. It has been needed for a long time, and this virus can help usher in a new era of dentistry in Kentucky. If we cannot identify positive COVID-19 patients that are asymptomatic, extensive precautions would have to be put into place. We can check temperatures, of course, but as you know, asymptomatic carriers are of great concern. As far as PPE goes, professionals would need surgical masks, face shields that work with loops for many, N95 masks, not homemade masks, disposable gowns, disposable shoe coverings, and gloves. The room would require some sort of negative pressure isolation system. Any instruments that produce aerosols would need to be used with the high volume evacuation system to reduce aerosols. Beyond the equipment, dentists would need to be required to provide additional time per patient in order to put new practices into place, disinfect between appointments, and allow any residual aerosols to fall. This is a crucial point, as there will be a diminished hourly profit within an office, but it will be necessary for public health. I want to close with a personal note. I have an adult daughter who is disabled and completely dependent. She is in a nursing home. My father-in-law has Parkinson's and dementia. He is in a nursing home. They are in the same facility on the same wing. Both my mother and mother-in-law are elderly and at their own homes alone. I have done all for them and those like them. We need strong leadership and guidance when it comes to reopening dental offices. Many, but not all, in the dental community care more about the business than their staff and patients. Keep that in mind. We need objective, science-driven decisions to ultimately protect the ones we love. And I'd like to add, this letter was also sent to the governor's office and Dr. Stack, and I believe I sent it to the attorney general also.
So did you get any response from this letter?
So I did, from the American Dental Association, our Kentucky chapter, that, you know, was a well thought out letter. I didn't really receive any other response from anyone else. Okay. I was just going to add also that, you know, one of the struggles that I had with all of this, besides protecting patients and myself and my family, was the fact that my license, I was worried was could be affected, that I could lose my license if I practiced and I went against the CDC guidelines, which were still the interim guidelines at this point and not changed.
So there were a couple of things I think in the letter that are really interesting is that, one, you said that, you know, hey, testing, that sounded like the biggest thrust. Testing is one of the best things you can do, because then you can automatically remove any positive patients from coming into the office, mm-hmm. as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And then you also talked about a change in PPE. Now, as a dental professional, you are already wearing a certain level of PPE.
Correct.
But it sounded like you saw that what you were doing would have to change in the COVID environment.
Yes. So first, as far as the testing, you know, and really the dental and the medical community, and I brought that up, could really come together. And I think I would like to see a change in that, because oral health affects your entire self, your health. And the testing could have been a way for those two groups to come together and really treat someone as a complete person regarding their health.
Right, because if you have people coming in and if you required testing, then automatically you're testing a pretty good portion of the population, yeah, over time.
Yeah, and they did that when offices or doctor's offices reopened, and if you had to have a procedure at the hospital, they require and still do require that you have a test prior to treatment.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, then a major change in PPE.
Yes. So that was one area that when I spoke about the plan was put together over that 4-day period. And at that time, we knew that there was a shortage of PPE. And we were told that your office could either use N95 masks or a level 3 mask with a shield. Either one of those.
Okay, and explain just quickly what a level 3 mask is.
So there's surgical masks, and they're either 1, 2, or 3, and that's the highest level is the 3, and it just offers more of a barrier against fluid. Yeah. So the filtration is the same, but it offers a higher barrier to any type of fluid.
So in this plan that they came up with, they said you can wear an N95 or you can do a level 3 surgical mask and wear a face shield.
Correct. So at this point, I've been in contact with my dentist, and he said that he was able to get some N95 masks. So I went, and you had to be fitted for those. So I went and picked up the N95 mask, and I'll be honest, when I looked at it, I thought, this doesn't look anything like any of the N95 masks I've seen. At this point, we were all very aware of what an N95 mask looked like. So I took the mask, and I had to go to one of the health centers to be fitted. And it was a simple test where they use like a scent to see if you have a good seal over with the mask. Mm-hmm. So I did the little test and the mask, you know, and I questioned them at the time. It didn't seal like what I thought it was supposed to, and it had ear loops. And they just said, well, that's just the way those are. They really didn't give me an answer. They didn't really explain. So I went back to the office and I said I didn't feel like that was a proper fit test and that I never had a seal on that test. And my dentist just told me that they don't seal. They don't have to seal. And we had a disagreement about that because that's the whole point of an N95 mask, is it's supposed to seal. So you're breathing through that and you're not breathing around the mask. So there again, did some more research and found out at that point that there were all kinds of N95 masks that had come through because of shortages. They had reduced the regulations, and those counterfeit N95 masks made it to Paducah, Kentucky. And there was a dentist in the area that had, I think, about 1,000 of them and was just basically selling them out of the back of his truck to a dentist that wanted them. Now, I think, you know, no one was trying to hurt anyone or to do something, but it was just another example of, you know, what can happen if regulations are not there. So I was able to find out, you can go to the CDC website and it'll show you exactly the criteria that have to be met for an N95 mask and signs of counterfeit masks. And these masks, that the masks that I was given, just ticked every box of what is a counterfeit mask. So then at that point, you know, what do I do? I've got to bring this to the attention of my dentist. We can't be wearing, not only did it not seal, but some of the masks only offered filtration that was way substandard for what is required. I think it was like a day or two later, I didn't say anything at that point. I was trying to decide how I was going to approach this. My dentist was not going to open on the 27th. He did decide that he was not ready. So I had a little bit of time there. It was about 2 days later that the New York Times had a investigative report that there were N95 masks out there that were counterfeit. And when I sent the article to my dentist, he said it was not reliable information, that the New York Times was not reliable, and that mask was fine. And then it was a few days later that it was all over the news that was not. And then what I was told, that I didn't have to wear that mask, that the other alternative was to wear a shield and the level 3. So it really was not even a sticking point at that point for him.
So, and then going back to that 4-day period where this new guidance was developed within just a few days, and that's where they said you could use an N95 or you could use a level 3 mask with a face shield. So, by the way, who put together that the guidance on how to reopen?
Yeah, so it was a group, or several groups. It was the Kentucky Dental Association, the Board of Dentistry. I think it was the University of Kentucky Dental School, the Kentucky Dental Hygiene Association. They all were together. And put that together.
And then I assume then once that was complete that you were able to, did you have access to see this guidance?
I did, but it was very vague. It left a lot for each individual office to interpret. And I know of people that are in the that are hairdressers, and the guidance that they were given was a lot stricter and, you know, to the letter, a lot more comprehensive than even what we had. And this is where I spoke about people reaching out to me. So all of a sudden I was getting private messages. It was nonstop. Other hygienists and other assistants, just because I think got a feel on social media that, you know, I was kind of speaking out a little bit. I ended up starting a private Facebook group, which now has 190 members. And it was a place for the assistants and the hygienists to kind of come together and share information and know what was truth and what, you know, just a place for them to come together. Unfortunately, some offices, they were being told one thing and it was not necessarily backed by science. And there were some hygienists and assistants even didn't feel comfortable sharing in that group openly, and I was getting private messages. Well, my dentist told me this, and I don't feel comfortable with this. I feel like I need to stand up. I feel like I need to be able to go, but I don't know where this information is. And they didn't know how they were going to be able to go in the office and did not feel comfortable with just taking that information. Mm-hmm. Just being told. They wanted to see it and they wanted to be able to feel comfortable with going to work.
So how did you feel personally? So the announcement was made that dental offices could reopen, and it was a lot quicker and sooner than you ever anticipated. And then just a few days later, all this guidance came out. So how did you feel yourself about the opening announcement and then the guidance that you were given?
I was very frustrated, and I felt let down. I felt let down by the dental community that we didn't have the concrete guidance that I was looking for. And I guess the other thing is that, I mentioned this, that we were going against the CDC guidelines, and I was having a really hard time with that. And that was one thing that I brought up. I tried to talk to the dentist that I worked with, and I said, I hope I can be honest. I want to bring something up. I'm having a hard time dealing with these, this conflict where the state is saying we can reopen, yet my license says I have to follow the CDC guidelines, and they say we cannot reopen. So I started making phone calls regarding that, also trying to contact the CDC, trying to contact OSHA, even contacted a lawyer to find out if something happened that they could somehow connect it to our office, that could I lose my license if I'm practicing and I'm going against what my license states. And so I brought that up to the dentist that I worked for, and what he said was that if I was scared that I needed to give my notice and maybe I needed to find another profession to be in. And I said I wasn't scared to go back to work. I love the job that I do, but I wanted to do it the right way.
So, and then you had also mentioned contacting an attorney. So what did the attorney say?
So it seems like it would be black and white, but of course it's not, because this is a novel virus and we don't know all the information, and everybody is trying to do the best that they can do. And because this is unprecedented, I would have a hard time either. It would be hard for someone to say that I was somehow negligent and responsible, and then also the other way around, that I couldn't say that, I guess that I'm not going to go to work because this is against, there's just no precedent for this. So they're really... I wouldn't be held responsible. And
so, you have some people in your dental community, it sounds like, that were, they were nervous, they were concerned, and then you had some in the community that just wanted to reopen. Let's just get reopened, mm-hmm. and go that direction. And as you said, there was some pressure, I guess, from a portion of the dental community just to reopen to begin with.
Yeah.
So was it ever addressed by the at the state level, like Governor Beshear's office or Dr. Stack, or was this ever addressed, this reopening, with maybe kind of vague guidance? Was that ever addressed by either one of them or anybody else at that level?
So the guidance was presented, or the plan was submitted to Governor Beshear and Dr. Stack, and Dr. Stack looked it over and he said it was a very comprehensive reopening plan, and basically he said that he did not say that dental offices had to reopen, that they could if they were ready. And he also said that that there were societal pressures that sometimes come into play, and you know, we can only, I guess what that may mean, or and. He basically stated that, and this is true, that dental offices and dental professionals have to deal with infection control procedures every day, all the time. My issue was that this was something new that we're still learning about every day.
Mm-hmm. You deal with it every day, but this was not an everyday kind of virus.
Yeah. Exactly.
So how long was it before your office did reopen?
So it was this second week of May. So it was a couple weeks after the date that you could open. Well, I take that back. They did reopen about a week after they could, with just the dentist and the assistant. And then the hygienists were brought back like a week after that to kind of see how things would go.
And then did your dentist put into practice anything new, anything different, I guess, according to the guidelines that were issued? What was different when you went back to work?
So when I went back to work, of course, we were wearing the mask and the shield, a hair covering. We changed our outer lab coats for every patient. We were given an extra 15 minutes per patient. There was increased infection control or cleaning procedures in the rooms, and there was a air filtration in every room. They screened patients prior to coming in, checking their temperature and not having a waiting room. But essentially in the operatories, and what I wore were those things, the hair covering, the shield. We were not using the ultrasonic instrument unless absolutely necessary, and then you use the high volume evacuation to reduce the aerosols.
How did you feel going back to work when you finally went back that very first time?
It was nerve-wracking at first, and it was very hot, but it, you know, you got into a routine and, you know, it was okay.
So you went back, before you went back, what kind of preparations did, you know, your office have to do or you have to do before you got started?
So my big thing was getting together with the entire office somehow, like a Zoom meeting or, you know, having a game plan of how we were going to do things. And that was kind of met with some, you know, it wasn't really welcomed. You know, at first my dentist said, well, yeah, maybe I can figure that out. And then, you know, the further we went and the more I kind of pushed that we need to know exactly, we need to have a plan. And then, well, I don't know how to do a Zoom meeting. So then we ended up all getting together. Well, I say all of us getting together. I thought it was going to be the whole entire office. And it ended up being the dentist, the office manager, which was the dentist's wife, and myself and the other hygienist got together. And some of the things that we asked for a lot more time for each patient. And that was met with, you know, it's the business versus the being a healthcare provider and how those sometimes don't mix. So that we were told we were not going to get any more time for each patient, which we really had a problem with, the other hygienist and myself, because we were seeing patients every 45 minutes. Well, reality came that we were going to have an extra, some extra time. We were given 15 minutes extra. You know, some of the other things that we discussed was, we didn't, at that time, I had planned to wear an N95 mask and not do the shield. And I soon found out there was one N95, one real N95 mask that I was given. I was given the one that we found out was counterfeit. There was one other one. That one I was not fit tested for, and I was told at that point that I had been fit tested for one, and if I wanted to be fit tested again, I would have to pay for that. That N95 was a real one. I looked online to find out how you don and doff and how you wear that, and I wore it for one 8-hour shift, and you know, I couldn't tolerate it. So we didn't have that many of, you know, those N95 masks, and that ended up being kind of an issue because I questioned how we would sterilize or disinfect those masks, and, you know, there were all kinds of things that were, you know, being thrown out there. At that point, you know, the medical community was trying to figure out how they could reuse PPE, and my dentist kept saying that there was like an ozone generator that they could disinfect it, and I didn't see any information that was even an adequate way to decontaminate an N95 mask, so that became an area of contention. And that's one thing that during all of this that was so frustrating was I wanted to see the science behind everything, and the political kept coming out instead of just the science. And everything we do in dentistry is science driven.
Right. So what? How did the political come out? Because as we've all known, obviously, your political view is often an indicator of how you view the virus. So how did that come out in your experience?
Well, when I brought up about the counterfeit N95 masks, and that was brought out that was my information was not reliable. It was the New York Times. Mm-hmm. Just different times that saying, well, that's all just the media hype, and it's a hoax, and it's, And I'm looking at the fact that the World Health Organization and the CDC are sounding alarms. Mm-hmm. And those are the groups that I'm going to listen to.
Right. So you are working in an environment that, don't let me put words into your mouth, but in your opinion, maybe didn't take the virus seriously, or did they?
No, they didn't. At least not to begin with. No.
And were you hearing this from other dental professionals?
Yes, I was. In this group or in private messages, like I said, there were a lot of, and I say, it's mainly females in the profession that I'm in. It's not strictly all, but, they were feeling like some of those professionals were being told, I'm the dentist and this is, all you have to do is just listen to what I tell you and you'll be fine. And they weren't always feeling like that.
Right.
They wanted, the science, and didn't want somebody just saying it's okay. So they were reaching out and looking themselves, trying to find this information.
Right, because as you said earlier, decisions could be made on a professional healthcare basis, or it could be made on a business basis.
Yeah.
Because obviously business was affected during this time. As small business owners, most dentists, small business owners, they were affected greatly.
Yeah. Yeah, I wanted to make sure that that our office survived and that I had a job, just like at all of, we all did. But we, and there it wasn't all dentists. There was, I was interviewed for an article in the Courier Journal, and there were dentists that were saying, "I'm not going to open yet. We need to know more about this." Mm-hmm. And they're doing the right thing. There were offices that did the right thing.
Right.
And, the dentist that I worked for, he was, in some ways going above and beyond what the guidance was. I just didn't feel like the guidance was always that was really appropriate or thorough enough, I guess, is what I want to say. It left a lot of room for an office to do as little or as much as they wanted.
Mm-hmm. And there was no 100% this is how you deal with the virus answer either.
No.
Right. So you worked. So you went back to work.
Mm-hmm.
So how did that go? Day in, day out, as you were there longer, how did that go?
Well, it was very difficult in the office that I was in, because one of the things that they did say in that guidance they didn't. It was a reduced patient flow. I think that was one of things that Governor Beshear talked about, was having a reduced amount of patients. And I'd have to go back specifically how they worded that in the dental guidance. But it wasn't, there was no specific, like they would say for the restaurant industry, you can only have 1/3 of, you know, capacity. There was nothing specific like that. So I know of offices that went right back to the exact amount of patients that they always had, mm-hmm. without any reduced flow to, you know. And ours, the office I was in, it was a few less patients every day.
And why, and once again, I think you may have already sort of mentioned this earlier, but just briefly, why did you need a reduced number of patients? Since they're only there one at a time anyway.
Right. My concern was the aerosols that and droplets that were left in the air. First of all, you had to do more, we did more cleaning and more time in between to allow for the cleaning. But my concern were the aerosols that were left in that operatory. My concern was for that next patient that came in.
Mm-hmm. That would have to walk into, basically,
aerosols that potentially are in the air. Mm-hmm. So I was having a harder and harder time personally, professionally, to work in an office that was not allowing for longer periods of time between patients. Mm-hmm. And there were times when staff in the office were not following the guidelines, were not wearing masks all the time, and that was not being enforced. And when I questioned those things, it just became clear to me that that was not the office that I needed to be in any longer. So
what happened from there?
So I started looking for another job and put in my notice. So I basically went back to work at that office for 2 to 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And now in a different office.
So how was that received when you left that office?
Oh, it wasn't good at all. It was very, very toxic environment and during that, that 2 week notice was, yeah, it was not good.
Right. So what made you decide to go to this new office? What was different about that?
So this dentist was actually, the one that I'm working for now, was just a way ahead of the curve. He follows science and had been watching things that were happening with the virus. And I was aware that he actually shut his office prior to the mandate to shut the offices. And I actually reached out to him because I thought that was just amazing that he was obviously watching and decided that he could not continue to stay open because of the risk. Mm-hmm. And it was even before it was mandated. So it's a completely different environment with really just being aware of the science and respecting that and treating the office, protecting staff and patients. There's much more time between each patient. So I can go from one room, let it sit, and then use another room for the next patient.
And now it's September.
Yes.
Of 2020, which in many ways feels like a long time since the pandemic started, but it's a very short amount of time. So what, in your opinion, is the state of the dental community, even now, after you've been open for a while?
So I have not really heard of any locally any transmissions that I know of that have occurred directly in a dental office. Obviously, as a community, we are doing something right in the dental community regarding infection control and controlling transmissions between either, patient to, the dental community or vice versa. So we're obviously doing something right. And I just do the best that I can. I do know for myself personally, in my practice, I never used a shield before and I never used a hair covering. And even after all of this, we get a vaccine, or that's permanently changed for me. I will always wear a hair covering and a shield in my practice.
So there are ways that this is going to, in your opinion, change dentistry.
Yes. Yeah. And we have air purifiers in all of the rooms, and I think that will never change. I think for a lot of offices now.
So I think that's about all the questions that I have. Is there something that you would like to discuss or something that I didn't go over that you would like to say?
I think, again, just stating that my dream is that the medical and dental communities would not be separate any longer, that there would be a union of those professionals, that the dental community would be always included as part of the medical community for the health of individuals, complete health of individuals, and to promote health that way, and that insurance companies would also look at oral health as being essential to the health of a person, and that would all be included, and not as, well, I get 2 free cleanings a year with my insurance, and that it truly is part of the overall health of a person. I think that would be we've learned a lot of things that none of us ever thought we would be, saying in our everyday life following this virus. But we all need to be proactive and advocates for our own health and to be aware of the practices in medical and dental offices.
Mm-hmm. Right, because you always assume that you go to the doctor or the dentist, which they're doctors, mm-hmm. and you just always assume that they're the professional, they know what they're doing, and they have the right motivation.
Yeah. You still have to look out for yourself.
All right. Well, this is interviewer J.T. Crawford, and this concludes my interview with Wendy Crawford, registered dental hygienist in the state of Kentucky, and this is September 27th, 2020.